The ideas, the leaders, the lives that are shaping Denmark and the world. From Blocks Hub in Copenhagen, Denmark, this is Global Denmark.
Welcome back to the Global Denmark podcast, where we explore how thought leaders and innovators are working to create a better Denmark and a better world. Well, guys, we recently had the pleasure of sitting down with the director of talent attraction at Copenhagen Capacity, Nikolaj Lubensky. Nikolaj has been leading the talent attraction effort for the last 7 years, working on implementing Greater Copenhagen's attraction and retention strategy, both for international students, but also highly educated specialists. In this wide-ranging conversation, we discussed his role, how, who, and what the value proposition is for actually attracting and retaining top talent, both to Copenhagen, but also to Denmark on the wider scale. The new Talent to Denmark initiative, a 53 million kroner initiative that just kicked off, where they're working with a bunch of partners to streamline the national branding strategy. In addition, we looked at COVID-19, our old friend Corona, and how in a time where it's not possible to leave the country, we can even talk about global talent, both in terms of the short term, but also the long term strategy. A lot of great stuff here. So without further ado, we bring you Nikolaj Lubensky. All right, we are back. I am here with the Director of Talent Attraction at Copenhagen Capacity, Mr. Nikolaj Lubensky. Nikolaj, can you hear me? We are on Skype right now.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, excellent. How you doing?
I'm good. In spite of this situation, I'm good. Yeah, and nobody in my family is hit by corona, so I feel fortunate in that sense.
Yeah, there is that, you know, if you can have health with you, you know, everything else can be taken in stride.
Exactly. That's also my view on it.
Well, I really appreciate you calling in, and I'm really curious, and I know our audience will be as well, of what's going to go on with the whole global talent scene in light of the COVID-19 situation. But before diving into kind of those implications, perhaps you can tell me a little bit about yourself. I can see that you've been running the global talent at Copenhagen Capacity for about 7 years. Maybe you could say a little bit about yourself.
Absolutely. I was actually employed here 7 years ago to build up the talent attraction and retention activities of Copenhagen Capacity. And Copenhagen Capacity is a non-for-profit investment foundation or business foundation working to attract global companies, investors, and talented people to the area of Greater Copenhagen, meaning both the eastern part of Denmark, but also the southern part of Sweden, contained within Greater Copenhagen. And the reason why I was basically employed here to do that was that we experienced that a lot of international companies, instead of asking the tax question or can we get a plot of land for free if we move to Greater Copenhagen, they started asking the talent question. Is there the right people for us to employ in order to develop our business here? We also saw a big change in that, whether the investments were market-driven or more knowledge-driven, where market would go for having this Scandinavian market, Danish market, or the Northern European market. There we saw a big change, and actually a lot of companies started directing their investments into more knowledge-driven investments. So they wanted to be close to universities, those two great clusters. Of course, knowledge is basically people. It made sense to dive into to see what could we do more in a place like Greater Copenhagen to attract the right people in order to both have the companies and investors also following suit.
Absolutely. And I know talking to Klaus Lundborg, he kind of mapped out the areas in which Denmark had a competitive advantage for attracting foreign direct investment, you know, whether it's within life science or biotech, medtech. And what was the development then since you started in terms of the talent on the ground? What was it like 7 years ago and where are we at today?
Yeah, it's actually been very interesting to follow the situation up to at least the COVID-19. We'll discuss the other one afterwards. But because when I was employed at that situation, we more saw a government need. We need to attract more in order to keep the businesses here and get businesses as such thriving. So at that time, you can say the demand from the company side was not as big as it is now. So it's been an interesting 7 years in the sense that it was very much seen from the more public side at that time big need for opening up more of the borders and making sure that the people should be able to relocate to Greater Copenhagen and Denmark, whereas the companies were still a bit struggling in the aftermath of the financial crisis. So,
right.
So what I've seen over 7 years is that the demand from the companies just exploded. We have lots of companies now, especially looking for specialists within the digital area or within life science. And in the same period, of course, the government's been a bit struggling with what is their position to immigration, but that's a different story.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's interesting then. So it was started in the public sector as a need, and then the companies came on later. That's really interesting. And now the kind of the immigration policies are a bit contradictory in a way to the private sector demand. What is the data there? You know, people ask me and all the time, you know, how many internationals are in Copenhagen or in Denmark? And would you have any data on that, on the trends the last
year? Yeah. Absolutely. It's just been going upwards. You can say when people are asking you, it's also a bit of a complicated answer because the data and the register data is not so good at this because the different data banks, some authorities are only allowed to ask some questions, some others are only allowed to ask some other questions. So it's sometimes also when you talk in general, is it a talent as talent, the talent of a definition, or is it an expatriate? Is somebody from abroad having a different passport than Danish working in Denmark? And so that could also be the construction worker.
Right.
But basically, when we look at the overall statistic, somewhere between 10 to 15% have a different passport.
10 to 15%.
Yeah, and that's just been going upwards ever since 2013 when I was employed. So we've just seen an increasing number, more and more important share of the growth of companies have also been dependent on being able to hire international Danish-based companies. And why I'm saying Danish-based, lots of them would be owned also by foreign companies, but based in Denmark. But loads of them would actually have seen their growth coming also for being able to employ international.
Okay.
And normally we say that between 2/3 and 3/4 is based in Copenhagen.
Okay. And then your reason for being is to then say, look, we have either this public sector or private sector need, and then you guys execute operationally and you find these people and bring them to Denmark.
We actually do two things, you can say. We both focus on the new talent attraction, getting new ones from abroad to relocate to Denmark.
Yes.
And then we retain, especially international students, as the second part.
Okay.
So we also focus a lot in the second target group. We focus a lot on we have something between 25,000 to 30,000 full degree international students at Danish universities every year. So we've also considered, why not actually giving them an opportunity to start their career in Denmark instead of going back to their home country or starting their career in some other country? So we also focus a lot on retaining international full degree students.
Excellent. Well, why don't we kind of break it down a little bit? Who are the talent, you know, if we're looking at an avatar here, and where are they?
Yeah, exactly. And actually, that depends a little bit on whether we're talking on the talent attraction or we're talking on the talent retention side.
Okay. Let's start with attraction.
Start with the attraction side, coming straight from outside, from a different country and being attracted to work in Greater Copenhagen. There we focus on the specialist sector. I need to say, Thomas, just before we go on, that we are here for the common good. We are a non-for-profit business foundation. That means we're basically a private organization, but we also work for public money. That means that we don't do recruitment. And that's important.
Right.
We do talent attraction. That means that we make sure that we brand Greater Copenhagen as an interesting place to work. And then we attract and got the curiosity, we get them connected to companies. But it's the companies who employ them. Where a normal recruiter would take it all the way, they would select the profiles and then get them hired in the companies. We leave the hiring either to the recruitment companies or to the companies themselves. It's just for making sure the people understand what we're doing.
Yeah, you're doing the sourcing, but not the selection. And
exactly. So we leave it up. We do the rough screening sometimes, but which is left to the private sector or the company.
Right.
Coming back to your question, looking at the people from abroad, that's very much the specialist segment, meaning 3 to 5 years of experience at the least, going upwards from that. It's very much focused within some of the strongholds that we have in Greater Copenhagen, that's meaning the life science sector. So that could be a specialist within Q&R, within project management, or within some specific research field or something else, but very much the people being somewhere, of course, in the early years of their career, not necessarily having 20 years of experience, but at least 3 to 5. So it's a specialist that the companies are looking for. It's in life sciences within, and then it's very much within the green, the engineers working in the green tech sector, or working with green with sustainable solutions.
Okay.
So these are the main three focus areas.
Okay.
Where they're located is we very much are focusing more and more outside. When we started up 7 years ago, it was more possible to attract from the EU.
Yeah, from an immigration perspective, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, with all the rules, where if you were part of the internal market, you could start working immediately. And of course, that's a big assistance. That's also why I think still, even though we have been focusing more and more outside of EU, still you would see the people we have assisted having still a majority within the EU. But what we've seen over the 7 years is that the competition within EU countries and also the ability to attract change. So there's the competition is becoming more fierce within everybody needs people. We've had the great fortunate situation in Denmark that we've been able to attract a lot of great people from Poland and from Romania, just to take two countries. But these are actually two of the countries with the highest growth rates right now, meaning they need their people.
Yeah, they're having their own efforts to attract. Yeah,
exactly. So that's why we've started to and done that for the last 3-4 years, focusing much more on the States or South America. Yeah, you can say in the proximity of EU, Ukraine, Turkey, Egypt, where they actually have absolutely great people. But the prospect, some of these places for the people being able to pursue a career is not maybe as good as they could be for them in Denmark. We are both looking into like a pull and a push factor.
Right. Now, Nikolai, in terms of a branding of Copenhagen and of Denmark in general, you know, we hear all the time, one of the happiest countries in the world and Hygge and, you know, these overall things. What are you, though, seeing in terms of the value proposition for this specific group that really speaks to people to bring them here?
Yeah, you can say it's a great combination, as you're also mentioning, Thomas. It's both. Actually, what we're very much working on is to combine three things when we do our talent attraction. One is to do what you would call place branding. That's actually why Denmark, why Greater Copenhagen? What are the attractiveness about this? One of the attractiveness is, of course, something that you can have a great life while having a great career. We have a system where you actually can combine these two. You don't have to either to work 12 or 14 hours a day and then not being able to see your family or anything. We have this welfare system where somebody could be able to the daycare systems and look after the kids, but you can also have a great career even though you have a family and or you have other interests to pursue. Having this model of working, this flexible labor market, but also flexible life system, if you call it that, that's actually an attractiveness. So that's very much into the place branding, having a secure, we are small, secure society, not long distance, you don't have to spend a lot of hours commuting.
Yeah,
you can be part of society where we're working to make it CO2 neutral within a relatively short horizon. So there's lots of, can say, more societal assets that we try to put into the place brand. And we have to combine it with two other things. We have to combine it with what we call employer branding. Why this company or why this cluster? Why work in robotics in Denmark? Why work within the health tech sector? Then you need international talent also to see that this could be a boost of my career to go to Denmark. And there you need to be knowing that you enter into an environment or a business cluster that is actually on the forefront in the world of developing new solutions, or that you can see there's lots of employability possibilities, that if you fail with the first company, there's lots of other companies looking for you. So you have to see that it gives a boost to your career somehow.
Yeah, you can see these areas too, where Denmark truly has a competitive advantage in medtech, in the robotic industry. Now it's really fascinating to see how these clusters just spring out of fintech, you know, and just it becomes real strength.
And if you need to move people, they need to see that perspective.
Yeah.
I actually get a boost in my ability, but also in my record of going in to work in that cluster. That gives me something.
Right.
And then the final component is, of course, having an attractive job. And that's the third. So it's place branding, employer branding, and then a call to action, a proper job. But of course, the single job also needs to be attractive. So you also need to see that this job I'm taking here will actually fulfill my expectations and develop my abilities going forward. So it's a fine balance between actually posing these three elements into a way of attracting people. But what we've seen over the years, Thomas, is very much that it's become more and more emotional the way we create attention. As you're talking about the happiness, one of the slogans could be something like that. There's more to our happiness than 5 weeks of paid vacation. So, yeah. That's where in the beginning, like 7 years ago, we were having slogans like, there's 100 companies looking for you. What are you looking for?
Yeah.
But I see this emotional side that there's something, I need a great job developing my career between 9 and 5. But what happens between 5 and 9?
Right.
That also needs to be attractive. And we've actually seen the way to create attraction or attention is more on the emotional side. That's where more and more it starts. And then we take them through a nurture flow where they actually get closer to the more pragmatics of the job or the cluster or the living conditions and the requirements, the tax system, and all that.
Yeah.
But it starts at the other end.
Yeah, there needs to be that emotional attachment to the decision. It's not just this abstract rational process.
Precisely.
So you get the talent here. How do you keep them? And what are some of the barriers that you... you work to kind of mitigate?
Yeah, of course, we could see from the very beginning that we need to have a proper value chain all the way through. It's not enough that we are good at attracting. We also need to be good at welcoming, and we need to be good at living and working, as we call the integration part.
Yeah.
And we also need to be good at the reputation part when people leave us in the very end. So we've seen these four, you can say, chains in the value chain, is that we have first attraction, we have secondly welcoming, we have thirdly the living and working or integrating, and then we have the reputation part as the fourth element in the chain.
Yep.
And all of them has to be both aligned, but they also we need to see some work done on all of them. But it's not us as Copenhagen Capacity that is doing all in that value chain. So we focus on what we're good at. It's actually, on the one hand, attracting new specialists from abroad. That's the attraction part. And then we focus on the retention side, but more the retention side of giving international students a career. Some of the other parts, we work closely together with the international houses, which is, of course, in Greater Copenhagen, it's the International House Copenhagen,
right?
Where they are good at doing all the paperwork and all the welcoming activities. And then we work with all kinds of other organizations like the Confederation of Danish Industries. So what we've done instead is that not to try to do everything ourselves, but we've entered into a very close collaboration with specialists in each their parts of the value chain.
Yes. What are you seeing in terms of the university students that are here? What kind of things have to happen for them to truly consider staying in Denmark to live and work?
It actually starts very early. They need to, from the very start of their studying life here, they need to see that there's actually career possibility. So what we try to do and work together with the universities doing is both giving them the perspective on there's actually jobs out there. And the best we could ever do is to either get them a student job from the very beginning or get them into an internship in a Danish-based company. Because the problem for them is that they can't find their way. There's lots of companies that actually would love to employ them, but the companies are not aware what the international students are able to do. And the international students don't know the names of the companies and don't know how to.
Right.
So what we try to do is to be the broker between these two, you can say, elements or two groups, and then assist the international students of finding their way into starting having a network among Danish companies and among Danish colleagues. So that's basically, so we do career programs, but the career programs has a lot to do with matchmaking and making case competitions and company challenges. And so they get acquainted both with the way Danish companies work, but also the way that they know some of them and get a network.
Can you see that if they have a two-year master's program, that the decision to stay is usually made within year one?
Often it is. Actually, what has happened, lots of the international students, they started thinking about this when they were doing their master's thesis. Right. And that was all too late, because lots of them would have a relatively short slot after they graduate, where they either need to finance their stay here by themselves, or they also can't stay longer if they don't find a job. So often they have a slot somewhere between 3 months and half a year, and then they simply can't sustain themselves here if they don't find a job. And then starting up only half a year before you finalize,
it's late in the game. Yeah,
exactly. Then you won't have necessarily the right time to find the right. But we have to need to start that process earlier. I think normally what we say, Thomas, is that the first half year when they're here, they should just know the possibilities there. And then if we are good, we could give them or get them a student job of some kind. But in the first half year, they need to find a place to live. They need to find how to study in Denmark and all that. So then after the first half years, then we really start focusing on what can we do in order to get them acquainted with Danish businesses.
And I think if they're still smiling after the first Danish winter, there's a high chance you can get them.
Yeah, exactly. but there's a great potential, actually. They're not in the winter, Thomas, but a great potential.
Just leave,
in
leave them alone, yeah.
Yeah. But a lot of the students also choose to study in Denmark for a reason. Not only because of the good educational system, but often they would like to actually have the perspective from the very beginning that they could see them pursuing a life here. So that makes it even more a pity when we are not able to retain them after graduation, because lots of them actually start up having the intention of would like to stay here for longer.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit more about a specific project. I know about this new Talent to Denmark project. Maybe you could say a few words about that.
Yeah, it's basically, we're very fortunate to have got that. It's a 3-year project, and it's the Danish Business Promotion Agency and the Danish Business Promotion Board who's actually given us this project for the next 3 years. You can say that it's taking not only that what we're doing right now, that we are doing it for Greater Copenhagen, but we together with actually 35 partners around all of Denmark, we can actually lift the activities to the Denmark level, meaning that one important difference here is that we have very much focused on having regional initiatives like Greater Copenhagen and something called Head Start in the Mid-Jutland area. And instead of like not having them coordinated, this project will both make the coordination, but also the visual identity of when we're doing attraction programs, we are joining forces now.
Okay. You guys can guide that in terms of other regions looking at your operation strategy and say, okay, if you can execute like this, there's a greater chance for attracting to your regional areas?
Exactly. That's both. And we could learn both ways that something great is taking place within, for instance, the career program in northern Denmark. Why not mainstream that to the full country? So we take like the best practices from around and learn and implement them in the other regions. And then, of course, also coordinate them so there's not a big confusion of, is this the same, or if I'm attracted to this area here or this program, how does that differentiate from another? To put it short, we have 4 initiatives in the Talent to Denmark project. One is to, as I said, coordinate and do more attraction to Denmark as such. The second is to actually digitalize and work more on the onboarding and welcoming activity. We see a big potential in making more of the information services and take them to more digital platforms and making sure, again, that it's coordinated and the level of service in the welcoming and onboarding activities, that it's lifted for all of Denmark.
Yeah, it's really an important point. You know, you hear all the time about the first 6 months to a year. People are just psychologically vulnerable because they're in a new environment. And the more service they experience and, just help, that can really dramatically increase, I think, the retention rate.
Exactly. And that's actually also a point of criticism that we have on ourselves. I think something we've not been good enough at doing there. And especially because we have this very much, you can say, focus on having a job. And then we also have family life and a personal life in sports clubs in the afternoon. So yeah. The evening. So we've not been good at assisting people to get into society. It seems like then we are leaving our job and then we leave the expats for to themselves. So yeah. Something else needs to come up and be there.
Oh, it's really promising to hear that, you know, that from a national perspective, they've kind of identified a fail point in the process, and they're really going to work systematically on this. That's great.
On that, yeah, it's absolutely a thing we need to improve. And then the third activity is actually directed towards Danish businesses, because we've seen that the potential for a lot more, especially SMEs, small and medium-sized enterprises, a lot more of them could actually employ internationals. But they refrain from doing it, either because they think the administrative side of it is complicated, or they refrain from it or don't do it due to cultural ideas of that it's difficult to integrate work environment or something else. So the third activity is actually directed towards, together with the business hubs around Denmark, to assist more, especially of the small and medium-sized enterprises, of both overcoming the more administrative barriers, but also assisting them in to get the onboarding done right and assist them in starting the process of hiring internationals, because there's lots of potentials, both in export-wise, innovation-wise, productivity-wise. So that's why we see a great potential there.
Yeah, getting over the fear of the unknown, right? That it doesn't have to be as complex as maybe you're making it seem in your mind.
Precisely. And a lot of the, you can say, the rules looks awfully complicated, but there's actually assistance to get from different organizations where you can actually get help overcoming some of this. And by building up this help system of, for instance, the business hubs, the six business hubs in Denmark, if they have this expertise also within the business hub, then it's actually not so difficult to hire an international.
Oh, excellent.
And then the fourth activity is basically making more matching and retaining more of the international students on a Denmark scale again. These are the four activities in the Talent Denmark project.
It sounds like a very interesting and a necessary project, and it'll be great to follow it and to see kind of the value impact it's going to make. I'm really happy to see the investment being made into this. That's great. So we have all these activities and the new project and everything, and then we have this something called COVID-19, coronavirus that hits us. Now, the borders, if I wanted to go to Sweden right now, I can't. I can't. I'm not globally mobile right now, and no one is. What does this mean in terms of global mobility, the whole corona situation? I guess both from an immigration standpoint, but also the economics and what you're hearing on the ground.
Yeah, there's several ways of answering a very good question, but also a complicated one to look into, Thomas, at the moment. I think the best thing I could do is, I think there's actually a three-step scenario.
Okay.
That's the way we work with it. So we see a short-term, meaning until summer, maybe this year out, meaning that there we would slowly see, as we're seeing now, a slow opening of the Danish society. But we don't expect that opening will be, you can say, full. It won't be fully open before at least by probably approximately the end of the year.
Right.
So what we've done on the short term is that we've tried to adapt and change our activities so we could focus more on assisting internationals that are already here, whether students or expats. Students more to keep on having a motivation for studying here, not move back, and also still considering giving them the career opportunities that are there, directing, changing all our matchmaking events into virtual platforms and all that. But also making sure that the companies don't, you can say, redraw their investments from Denmark. It's actually very interesting to pair this crisis with the financial crisis.
Yeah.
In when we were looking at the financial crisis, which hit quite hard in Denmark at that time, we actually saw the international companies and international investments as a stabilizing factor. So they actually increased their share of the private employment over the years of the financial crisis.
That's interesting.
So that's very interesting, actually, also in this situation, is that what we're trying to do is also to make a big job for assisting the international companies to survive and also thrive in the current situation. But what is also interesting on short notice is that we still see quite some companies continuing with their talent attraction, both within, of course, obviously, some parts of their healthcare sector of the of life science, but also over in the crossover of medtech, as you said, finding solutions to how can you cure some of the not necessarily the corona virus, but other aspects of doing implementing more online systems and all that. And then, of course, all the digital activities has just
been.
So by sending every kid back home, you also give a great opportunity to the game company.
Absolutely.
So when they're not doing their schoolwork, they're either e-shopping or they're gaming.
Either way, we win.
Exactly. And that, of course, means that a lot of these companies actually see an increase in their activity.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see the companies that are really thriving because of this, the complete seismic market shift.
Mm-hmm. These companies are, of course, still hiring. And that's also why, just as we're talking, we're in the middle of a talent attraction campaign that we do, but very much focused on the very digital-based companies, looking for tech profiles of different kinds. And what we'll do and what we'll talk with the companies that are taking part in that campaign is that they would, on the short term, simply find the people and build up a pipeline. They might employ some of them, but let them start working from where they are, and look at the situation on the a little longer notice. And then what we do on the longer term, that's basically two different scenarios. Because one is that things get not necessarily back to normal, but back to normal with a crisis, but not a severe crisis. Then I think we have the option of restarting our activities the way they were done before. But that's only one scenario. The other scenario, which is probably more likely, is that there'll be a severe financial and economic crisis after this corona crisis.
Yeah.
And in that situation, what we would have to do is probably we will have to do even more work to make sure that both the authorities, but also the public opinion, sees the value of why is it necessary to have internationals in Denmark. So it doesn't become xenophobic or nationalistic or what you would call it, because what we can see from all data we have is that actually the internationals, they are job creators. They're not taking the jobs away from Danes. They're creating jobs for Danes.
that's really the... a political and psychological, game that has to be played, because I could see that being very, very tricky, especially as we know Denmark has been in terms of this whole issue prior.
Exactly. And that's of course, our concern is that if that political, which is obviously, if you have an unemployment rate that plus suddenly goes to 10% or something like that, as a politician, that's your voters, that's your... So, of course, it would be tempting to just say, okay, then we close the border for foreigners and make sure that we have jobs enough for Danes. But the equation doesn't look like that. And Denmark is a very open economy. We have only 4% of, in Greater Copenhagen, 4% of the overall amount of companies are foreign-owned, but they employ 32% of all the private employees. They alone, foreign-owned companies, is one-third of the export.
Wow.
So that's
a lot.
So it's really a lot. So if you like start to actually think about this actually making the economy less open, you would actually enter in much more severe problems. But it's a difficult, as you say, it's a fine balance of how to communicate this, how to keep on our activities on attracting the people that is actually needed for the companies to thrive.
Yeah, so, and I can imagine that, you know, the initial move will be, oh, we want it within Denmark, and then it'll be, okay, let's keep it within the EU for solidarity. I think really this could really hurt non-EU talent in terms of getting into Denmark the most, if I'm just thinking about the potential political consequences.
Absolutely. I think you're completely right.
If you're making a risk analysis as a company right now.
Exactly. And that's, of course, also what we are looking into. So we have taken it, adapted all our activities on the short term, and then we simply have to see what comes during the autumn and see how deep will this crisis be and what implications will it take. And then we'll have to adjust from there. But for sure, we need to keep arguing why it's necessary to have also on the talent side an open economy.
Yeah, well, we'll do what we can from our platform to get that message if the political winds start to heat up, for sure.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
And it makes a lot of sense also from a tactical standpoint what you're doing in the short term to really maximize value creation for, you know, the talent and the companies that are here. It makes a lot of sense. Well, Nikolai, I'm mindful of the time, and I just want to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with what we call our quick fire round to wrap up the podcast today.
Studying for an executive MBA at Henley Business School in Denmark is an intense and rewarding experience. If you want to achieve the best possible outcomes in business and in life, Henley can give you the skills and knowledge you need through the Henley MBA. For more information, visit henley.dk.
We are back with today's guest, Nikolai Lubensky, the Director of Talent at Copenhagen Capacity. Nikolai, what habits, routines, or rituals do you do every day to stay sharp?
That's a great question. I have a little commuting time. I think I live up north of Copenhagen and have half an hour in the train. And actually, I spend that half an hour normally, you know, not right now. But normally, I spend that half an hour zooming in on the day. And I can see what is the most important and how can I make a difference. So that's the daily routine normally.
So really just using that time to, is that in the morning before your day starts?
In the morning. Yeah, that's when I go from where I live to my work. Yeah.
Okay. So when you're hitting your first meeting, you have a very clear picture of what you want to achieve?
Yeah, that's what I use the time for, yeah.
Excellent. Have you ever undergone any one event or experience that you would attribute to a major leap forward in either the leader you are or the person you've become?
Yeah, you could say I had a very formative experience when I was just still at university. I got a student job in a consultancy company. I've studied sociology, have the PhD in sociology, but also my master's degree is within cultural sociology. Okay. And I went into a consultancy firm, started up a small consulting firm, started up by four people from the army. They were basically doing management training based on the methods of training army people.
Okay.
And I think that really opened my eyes for how different the world can look from what perspectives. And I really learned at that stage that all my prejudices about how things looks in the army or how things necessarily are, it was all prejudices. So what I learned from that experience very much to say, what are the opportunities here? What are not only my prejudices, but how do I need to overcome my prejudices in order to actually learn from this? So I think that was a very cultural experience within Denmark, though.
Yeah, seeing it as a path of growth and not of limitation, these exactly. different ways of thinking. And actually, I forgot to mention in the first part, but how do you see other companies, why do they want internationals in the first place? I mean, how do they kind of get rid of that in internationals limitation, see it as an opportunity for growth?
Yeah, because you can say there's a big difference. If you look at the big companies, they know they're very global. They have very specialized functions where they need to go for the best in the world in order to develop the product. So they're just basically looking for the best people for the job. So whether that's not dependent on the country borders. But if you look at the small and medium-sized companies, they are often also looking into international for reasons of opening new markets, for diversifying their product development. So it's also from the innovation side that they know, maybe following up from the experience I had, the formative experience being working together with people straight out of the army, is that I came with a perspective, they had a perspective, and together we developed something new. I think a lot of the companies really know that both for their product development, it's good to have the diversified labor force, but also on the other side, if you are to build up an international pipeline, open new markets, of course, it's great to have internationals on board with acquaintance or knowledge about these markets. So it's actually both sometimes just because they can't find the right people for the job in Denmark, but it's very often also the case that they would like to be more innovative or productive or being more global.
Yeah. And I think when you can create a psychologically safe organization where these kind of diverse perspectives can actually challenge status quo, you can really create some innovation, actually. It's amazing to see when it happens.
Yeah. And that's also why when it's a bit of different if you go to different types of companies, because a lot of the new companies, they are born global. They like from the very start, they see, okay, we are actually heading for a more global market.
Yeah.
And they would either in their founding group have internationals or as the third person, they would hire an international because they would like to see that the company is built from the very start as a global company. And you see more and more of those, fortunately. And in these companies, it's not a discussion. It's a default that they need international.
Yeah. Okay. Nikolai, what motivates you? And I guess what demotivates you?
Yeah. What motivates me first is that I have seen the value of having a diversified both country, an open country, and I really cherish being in international settings and seeing what achievements can come if you work together with people from all places around the world. So it motivates me very much to see that opportunities of getting more people to Denmark and seeing both their, you can say, the light in their eyes that they like to contribute and assisting developing this country and also seeing what is possible to achieve in a more cultural diverse setting.
Did you grow up with that? I mean, in terms of your background, how did you cultivate this mindset?
Yeah, I think I'm basically, my father's from Poland. That's the Lubenski part. And then I have a Danish mother. Okay. So I've had this intercultural intersection of some kind has been part of my life all the time. I've been expatriated 2 times, I've taken parts of my studies abroad. And it's always been motivating to be in cultural diverse settings. But it also motivates me to see how much more a small place in the world like Greater Copenhagen or Denmark can actually achieve by having this very open-minded attitude to internationals, which I really think has also become a lot better. And now better is a very moral affected word, but but I really mean that I can see that the people like to come here, for instance, making Greater Copenhagen CO2 neutral. And I see people are motivated by it and share the value and having that purpose-driven attraction and seeing also the abilities they have to assist in making this place on Earth even better. That really motivates me. And then that's also an answer to your second part of your question. What demotivates me is, demotivates me a lot. I mean, it's always being discussed that international takes the jobs away from Danes or that it's something that it's like, as I said, a zero-sum game. If it seems it's narrow perspective, to put it in that way, that really demotivates me.
Okay, well, I hope with Corona and the coming time that, you know, you're out there on the front lines telling that message and so people don't fall down that trap.
Yeah, I'll do my best.
Yeah. Did you have a teacher or mentor when you were younger that has had a big influence on you?
Absolutely. The first employment before I went, actually aside when I went into my professional life in the consultancy firm, as I described before, I also had a great professor at the university. He was very challenging. And I think that was actually a great learning point because he was he was not always just saying nice things. He was really challenging you. And I think he became a great mentor.
Oh, excellent. That was at Copenhagen University?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw you. So you got your PhD in sociology.
Yeah.
Now, I guess, you know, I don't talk to people that have a PhD in sociology every second of the day. So while I have you, what would you say is kind of the collective consciousness of Denmark, if you had to boil it down? People kind of ask if you could boil it down into kind of a sentence or a couple sentences. What are the kind of the moral attitudes or beliefs that are like underpinning everything?
Yeah, we are very, you again use some of the frames from my old sociological studies. There is that we are very much you could call it a tribe society.
Yeah,
we are small, very well registered, very well knitted together society where we historically has been needed to use everybody's skills in order to get anywhere, because we are not more than 5.6 million people now. I think that has become a bit of a tribe attitude to a lot of things, meaning that we need everybody to contribute. That means that we have a relatively low power distance. So everybody's opinion is important. But we believe in people. We believe in the one single person can make a difference. And the responsibility of each person to contribute is huge. So we really invest and believe and grow people. I think that's the positive side of the tribe. The more negative side of the tribe is that you're not as good at welcoming foreigners as I would like.
Right, because they're not part of the tribal trust circle yet.
Exactly. They have to build up their trust level in order to be accepted.
Yeah. We kind of see that all the time. Yeah. What would you say was your best piece of business or life advice you've ever received? I'm throwing some hard ones at you.
Yeah, it's a hard one. Yeah. I think some of the best advices I've had is that don't overestimate your influence.
Okay.
And I know it sounds strange to come with it as a life, but I think that if you do a great job, you are contributing great. But sometimes you also are too hard on yourself to make a huge difference. Do the job where you are and what you're doing. Do it great, and that's enough of a contribution. Don't be disappointed if you can't see, okay, now, as I've done together with my great team here, we've assisted more than 1,000 people finding a job in Denmark. And even though you would say over these years, is that enough? Could it be more? It's a great contribution to Danish society. And that's actually enough, so to say. Don't take ambitions too far and then fail with them.
I think that's a great piece of advice. You know, you can use that in both professionally, but also, you know, in parenting or in anything.
Yeah.
the good enough. And yeah. What book or books would you say have most influenced you and why?
Actually, one of my favorite authors, I remember the first time I read it, it's called The Joke by Milan Kundera, the Czech author.
Mm-hmm.
I think in his extremely well way of describing what a totalitarian society does to people, that really influenced my democratic viewpoints, how deadly important it is to live up in a society where you can actually be allowed to express your tone of voice and be allowed to think differently and what asset it gives. So I think actually A Joke by Milan Kundera is very influential.
Okay, I haven't read that. I'll have to take a look.
It's back from 1968, I think, or something like that. It's very old. It's a tremendous book. Yeah.
You look at the situation happening in Hungary, for example.
Precisely.
To a small degree, of course, in the United States, to a much smaller degree. But yeah, I think always relevant to be vigilant and how fragile democracy is.
And it's a novel. And if you like to have it a bit more hardcore, there's a great book by the Egyptian author, guy who wrote The Jacobinian House, Al-Aswani. He's written a small book called The Dictatorship Syndrome, which is also a very hard read in the sense it's very well written, but it's a hard read in how totalitarian societies actually work.
Interesting. What was the name of that one more time?
It's called the Dictatorship Syndrome. It's difficult.
Dictatorship Syndrome. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, I'll have to take a look at that too. Well, Nikolai, we're mindful of your time, and we're going to wrap up the podcast today with one final question, which we ask to all of our guests, and that's, what do you think you could, maybe your organization can teach Denmark, and what do you think Denmark can still learn from the rest of the world? So it's kind of a two-parter.
Yeah, I normally can say that I think we, again, coming back to my own personal advice, I think we need to be very humble. I think in Denmark, it's often the view that we're doing everything right and we have found the right path. And I think that should be challenged a lot because we are a small corner of the world. We're only 5 million. We are like a small city in China.
Yeah.
So of course, it's possible for us to do something that is a bit more systematic or documented, or so we shouldn't overthink that we have found the models for the whole world. But then again, on the other side, if we are humble enough, I think actually we have some solutions to offer the world, both in the, as we were talking about, the sustainability area, but also in the way that we tech and use tech in a more human side that many other places, and actually tech should be in the work of people, not in the work of profits, for instance. So from seeing from what we in Copenhagen capacity can do, I think that's basically what we're doing on an ongoing basis, is to on the one hand, making sure that we attract both companies, investors, and talented people to this place that gives an injection of new thinking and development and growth.
Yeah.
So we're trying to assist the companies on the one side and giving them opportunities. But while we're doing that, we're also, I think, assisting in developing a Denmark that will keep on being in the development.
I think that's really, really well put. And, it's really interesting just reflecting upon kind of the Danish attitude towards humility. You hear a lot about Jenteloven and how that relates to humility. But I think you're referring to kind of almost a deeper humility, and the humility to always grow regardless. Really interesting. Nikolai, before we go, where can our audience find you, find the projects you're working on right now?
Yeah, they can just go to our webpage. It's copcap.com. So copcap.com.
Okay. And the Town to Denmark project is on there too?
It's on there too, yeah. And there's also a specific website that is directed. You can also just search for the Talent to Denmark project, also attach Copenhagen Capacity to it, and you're sure you'll find it. There's a specific webpage for the project.
Perfect. Well, Nikolai, it's been an absolute pleasure, and hopefully we can catch up again, both in person when we can, but also in this forum. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks a lot, Thomas. It's been a pleasure.
Great. And to our audience, don't forget to jump over to iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate, review, subscribe. It really makes a difference. And until next time, see you on the GDP.
Are you getting the most out of your time in Denmark? Pick up the printed copy of the English language newspaper Copenhagen Post today to access relevant news and event information guaranteed to enhance your working and family life.